I didn't allow myself to dream for years. And once I started dreaming and being like, what do I want my life to feel like and be like? That was it. Getting very clear on that allows us to buffer some of those setbacks. Obviously, setbacks are going to happen. Failures happen. But when we say that dream is more meaningful than the setback, it keeps us moving forward towards it. And maybe you don't know how to get there. And that's okay. You don't have to know how. But the thing is that when we take a moment and really allow ourselves to feel like as if that was real, what would it look like? What would it feel like? Envision it as clearly as you possibly can. What we're doing is allowing our subconscious mind, the mind that literally drives 95% of our thoughts, behaviors, everything, to experience a different reality.
Welcome to the Happy, Healthy Human Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Levitin. What do the happiest, healthiest humans all have in common? They are students of success. In my mission to help both you and I become the happiest, healthiest humans we can be, I have studied success at all levels. And after spending over a decade working in the field of human development and flourishing, I can tell you with certainty, success leaves clues. On this show, I investigate and explore the common clues and foundational principles that tie together success in all areas of life. Whether it's happiness, health, wealth, relationships, it's all a part of the human experience. By following these success clues and understanding the underlying success principles, you will find that success is not simply a possibility, it's guaranteed. Every Tuesday, I give you simple, straightforward action steps and tools using these clues and principles of success to help you become the happiest, healthiest human you can be. Dr. Kelly Kessler is a licensed physical therapist, transformation coach, and the host of the podcast Rewiring Health, as well as the owner of Optimal You Health and Wellness. She's a mom of two boys, and Kelly helps high achievers stop feeling exhausted, disconnected, and compromising their health during the pursuit of achievement. And she does this through nervous system regulation and subconscious reprogramming. Kelly guides her clients through personal transformations to cultivate resilience, live abundantly, and feel connected with themselves. In this episode, make sure you listen up for Kelly's analogy of a thermostat versus a thermometer. That's just one of the many success secrets that Kelly drops during this conversation that I took note of, and I'm sure you'll have a lot of new tools by the time the episode ends. So enjoy this conversation with Dr. Kelly Kessler. What does it mean to be dysregulated?
Yeah, it's a good question. So dysregulated is really when we are not honoring ourselves. So we're constantly trying to go do more and really ignoring those little signs that our body and our minds and our energy is telling us. And we push it even harder. So with our system, our nervous system is essentially our operating system. So if you think about a computer, you have an operating system, your computer, it runs everything in the background. And when it works great, it's wonderful. Everything is smooth and things just happen. You don't even know how they're happening. But when it's dysregulated, that's when we start to see issues. So our nervous system, specifically our autonomic nervous system is what it's called, that controls our breathing, our heart rate, blood pressure, reproductive system. So it controls all our systems of our body. So when we become dysregulated, what happens is that all those systems are just on. They're on all the time because of stress, because of everything that's going on in our lives that's telling us that we need to be on. So if we're constantly being bombarded by social media or negativity on the news or just stress at home, stress at work, our system is saying, you need to be on, you need to be aware of this. And we adjust to that, but we were not meant to be in that state of chronic stress. And when we get stuck in that state, our system is essentially in that fight, flight, or freeze. It's ready to go at any time. It's essentially like a lion is in front of you all hours of the day. So think about how you would react to that. You would constantly be on, super focused, feeling like you could not relax, you can't rest, your mind is going because you're essentially in survival mode. And that's really what it is when we get into a dysregulated state, is that we are not coming back to this rest, digest, restore, this calm state. We're essentially stuck in a state of survival.
That makes a lot of sense, the way you explained it, fight, flight, or freeze, and a lot of the stress that comes from living life in the 21st century, from being always on at work and having 18 different side hustles and having family stress and life stress. So is this something that is just now a fact of life that we all just have to learn how to deal with? Is everyone walking around dysregulated? Because all of the things that you just mentioned seem like very normal parts of what is the human existence in the year 2024.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, this is what we're all experiencing because we're constantly bombarded with stimulus. We get more stimulus in one day than people years ago were getting in a lifetime. So we are trying to accommodate to an environment that is constantly demanding more and more and more of us. But where the problem comes in is that our brains have not adapted to the point of being fully functional in an environment like this. So while it's difficult to change the environment, we are living in a society that does demand us, a lot of us, that has a lot of stimulus constantly in our faces and negativity that we're living in. We do need to take control of our own inner situation. So while we can't change anything outside of us, we can do a lot of things to allow ourselves to be regulated. What I mean by that is that we can either act as a thermostat or a thermometer. So if you think of a thermometer, it just reads what's going on. So if it's cold outside, it'll tell you it's cold. If it's hot outside, it'll tell you it's hot. And it doesn't adjust anything. It just responds or reacts to it. And so we're all living as thermometers if we're not doing something actively about that. But what we need to do is act as a thermostat. And so a thermostat is you set the temperature in your house, maybe at 70 degrees. If it's 30 degrees like it is here, it will adjust to crank on so it stays at 70. If it's really hot, it'll tone down so that it stays at 70 or put the air conditioning on so it stays at 70. And so regardless of what's going on in our environment, our inner world can adjust to that. And that's really where those habits come in that we are integrating into our lives so that if the unexpected happens, we can't control that. And we will react to that. We will become stressed. And that's normal. We should be stressed when something stressful happens. But the difference is that how long do we stay in that stress state? And then can we come back to a state that is regulated? So that's where that thermostat comes in. If we have something that puts us to 100 degrees, are we going to kick on and integrate those habits and the lifestyle that we've built into our life so that we can come back to our 70 degrees and not feel like we're constantly reacting to what's going on outside of us?
It's a great analogy, the thermometer versus the thermostat, and helping people get out of living in reactivity and getting to a place of living proactively. It's what I call being in the passenger seat of life versus being in the driver's seat. When you're in the passenger seat of life, things are happening to you. You're always, as you said, reacting and responding. And to me, that's where a lot of our negative emotions come from, because we feel disempowered and we feel like, well, if life is just happening to me, I don't have an active say in things. And if I don't have an active say in things, then why even try? And that's how people become hopeless, helpless, demotivated, and a whole host of negative emotions. Mm-hmm. Now we can take it to the other side of that, right? Which is where we want to go, which is being proactive, which is that thermostat life. And you mentioned, you know, some of the habits and the routines that we need. So how do we start to build this and get out of that reactive lifestyle? How do we start to put in, or what do we start to put into place so that when my 30 degree day comes, I have it within me to balance out to 70?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So the first thing is awareness, because a lot of us are running on autopilot. We're just going through the motions. We are just trying to show up for work. We're trying to show up for our family, all the demands that life is constantly throwing at us. And we don't even know what we're doing. We're just trying to get through. And that's that survival mode. So if we can slow down for a moment and really bring awareness to what are we doing on a daily basis? What does our morning routine look like currently? You know, without judgment. And that's the big thing. It's like, just look at what you're doing. What are you thinking? What are your thoughts? What are your automatic thoughts that you're having in the morning? What are your behaviors that are just happening? And so it's really just slowing down and being aware of what we're doing. And that's where we can start to make those changes. Because now if we're aware, like, oh my gosh, I think this every time in the morning, like today's gonna be a hard day. I'm gonna really struggle through this. Oh, that's gonna be awful. Like, are we starting our day out like that? Because now we're setting it up where our brain is literally going to make that happen or find things to make that real. It looks for evidence throughout the day to make that real. Or are we starting our day with like, okay, if, you know, if the unexpected happens, I'm going to make the best of it. I'm going to learn today. Today, I'm going to be a better person at the end of the day than I am right now. And then our brain will find ways to make that real because it's constantly looking for evidence. So it's that awareness that we have to bring to ourselves in the start of the day and throughout the day that is really the first thing we have to do. And then once we're aware, now we can start making adjustments. So there's going to be adjustments that need to be made in your mindset first and foremost, because that's going to direct your behaviors. So that's where a lot of these belief systems come in. What are the beliefs that we're holding that we've maybe held for the last 40 years that aren't serving us? So it takes a lot of work to dive into that. But then it's also the behaviors. What are some of the behaviors we're doing throughout the day? So one example would be like, do you keep your phone on your bedstand and you roll over and you pull your phone up and now, you know, the news tells you everything that happened wrong in the world, all the negative things, and that's the first thing you see in the day. And then do you maybe go downstairs, grab your coffee, and then now you put the news on, you're getting more negativity into your day. And then you rush out, go to work, and you come back and you put it on again. So these would be some of these habits that maybe don't serve you in the best way possible, but it's that awareness of like, what are small changes we can make? So in that instance, maybe we put the phone somewhere else so that you're not looking at it. Wait 30 minutes before you look at the phone and really allow that time to set an intention for the day. How do you want to show up? And so that can be one of those small adjustments that you can make to really allow yourself to have a better start. And there's a lot throughout the day that you can go through, but that's just one example that I think it's pretty common for a lot of people to really have the phone there and always be exposed to things that are going on outside of them.
Yeah, it's a great example. And as you said, being bombarded with all of the negativity of the entire world in your palm in any instance is an extremely powerful thing that I don't think we quite grasp or grapple with yet. But something that I've heard you talk about on other podcasts and in some of your content online is resiliency. And, you know, we can talk about the small habits, the extra glass of water and the put your phone 30 feet away from your bed or, you know, blue light after 9 o'clock, and all of these things matter and they exist for a reason. But at a certain point, we have to shut up or go. Do it or don't. Draw a line in the sand, whatever you want to say. And that's how I think of like resiliency. It's like, do we do things in the face of all of the reasons we have not to do it? Because there's always a reason not to do the thing too. So that resiliency is something that we can cultivate maybe or build or grow. So I'm curious, how do we start to get to be a more resilient person if that hasn't been who we've been in the past?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. So really resiliency starts with your values. And so for many people, we don't even know our values because, again, we're living in autopilot. So it takes, again, that moment to be like, what is valuable? So some of mine are connection, growth, autonomy. So those are valuable to me. Those are the things that get me going. Like if there's an opportunity for growth, I'm there. If there's an opportunity to connect with myself or others, I am there. Autonomy, I love to have autonomy. I want to be my own boss. Like I want to do what I want to do in my life because life is short. So those are just some of my values that anchor me down and get me going. And it's important that we recognize our own values. They're very individualized. Everyone is going to come to life with different values that are really pull at the heartstrings, like something that's so meaningful. And some other ones, maybe family, love, you know, there's a lot of values that we can really hold. But anchoring ourselves down with just maybe five values is really the best part to start to build resiliency. Because now when you have these situations that come up, like the unexpected, that you could easily be like, I'm just going to go back to bed. You know, like then now you can say, okay, that is valuable to me. That is something that is meaningful to me. And I'm going to act, even though there's that part of me that doesn't want to, or I'm scared to, or there's a lot of fear around it. So that's part of it is anchoring in our values. But another part of it is projecting. So what do we want our life to look like? And what does that feel like, even more importantly? So this is another thing, like for years, I went and lived in autopilot. I was just going, what's the next best step? What's the next best step? Like, okay, I'll do this job. Okay, I don't like this job. I'll do this job. I'll get this degree. So we're just going to the next step. But like, I didn't allow myself to dream for years. And once I started dreaming and being like, what do I want my life to feel like and be like? That was it. And so getting very clear on that, again, allows us to buffer some of those things, those setbacks. Obviously, setbacks are going to happen. Failures happen. But when we say like that dream is more meaningful than the setback, it keeps us moving forward towards it.
Extremely powerful. And I appreciate you bringing this up about dreaming and how we kind of go through life just from one thing to the other to the other. And I'm curious for those listening and also for myself, because my initial gut reaction when I hear you talking about that, like in my head, I'm like, yeah, like it would be nice to dream. It would be nice to go after all this stuff, but I have shit to do. I have my life is in shambles right now and my back hurts and my mom is like this and my cousin is like this and my job is like that. And in the past, when I've set big audacious goals, when I've dreamed big, it's only come back to crumble on me. It's only set me up for disappointment and failure. Why or how can I focus on something theoretical all the way out years in the future when I have so much to deal with right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that is absolutely a life. And I have been there where it's like, I'm just trying to survive. You know, there was a moment in my life, I was building a house. I was pregnant with my first son. I was driving an hour to and from work each way, working long hours with a population that was extremely draining to work with as a physical therapist, feeling like, you know, I had student loans. I had so many things that were just piling on top of me. And I felt like I couldn't escape that. So I feel and understand that pressure where you're like, how do I even do that when I'm in survival mode? So it is not to downplay how easy this is. It's not an easy thing, but if you can set an intention to just do the smallest step forward towards that, that's really what it is. And it's not that you're just like, oh yeah, of course I'd love to have a house in Maui and I'd love to make $1 million. And you know, that's fine. That's not really what this is about though. What it is about is that you visualize your ideal life. You take 5 minutes every day to sit and close your eyes, take a deep breath and just visualize your life as if it were actually true. So maybe for someone listening, it is like working 20-hour week and having abundance and not worrying about finances and being able to be present with your kids and not having to hire a nanny or use daycare. Like maybe that's your dream situation. And maybe you don't know how to get there. And that's okay. You don't have to know how. But the thing is that when we take a moment and really allow ourselves to feel like as if that was real, what would it look like? What would it feel like? Envision it as clearly as you possibly can. What we're doing is allowing our subconscious mind, the mind that literally drives 95% of our thoughts, behaviors, everything, to experience a different reality. And that's the power of it. It's not to say that you dream this and the next day it's all going to work out and everything is great. But what it does is it gives your brain a different option than what you're living, because we all live in the past. We're living today as if yesterday is going to happen today and the last year is going to happen today. We constantly are living in our past life, but when do we ever live in our future life? And even if it's 5-10 minutes a day that you allow yourself to dream, sit in that, visualize it, now you're teaching your brain that there is another option. There's another possibility. And you don't have to have the roadmap to it right now. Your brain will literally start to try to figure that out for you, because now it's going to filter the world to see more opportunity, more possibility, rather than living in the past life of yourself.
That right there is a masterclass on positivity and positive thinking. That I think is a big missing piece for a lot of people. It's not about this blind optimism that's just like, well, if everything was good, then it would be good. Like, obviously, we want that to be the case. But as you said, you put it so eloquently, it's like it gives your brain another option. When all we see is negativity, we think that that's the only possible route. So just having a different possible outcome is very enlightening for us. And that in and of itself can take some of the pressure and some of that stress off, because it's like, okay, it is this way. It has been this way, but it doesn't always have to be this way. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about you personally, because as a doctor of physical therapy, as a physical therapist, nothing that we've spoken about thus far has been about anything physical therapy, fitness, body related. So I'm curious how you started to look at things so differently, where a lot of what you talk about and the way that you help people isn't exactly about changing what's going on in their body, but more changing what's going on in their mind.
Yeah. So I worked as a physical therapist for 7 years. And while there was a lot of benefit to it, what I found is that no matter how much I gave people the right tools, they weren't changing. And it became very frustrating because I saw the potential in people and I'm like, you're capable of so much more, but they still weren't changing because I could give them anything, you know, that was right and would help them. But unless you feel it inside, unless you change your mind, unless you change the driving beliefs, nothing's going to change. And so that became a very frustrating place to be in the world of physical therapy for me and my experience is like, there's deeper work that needs to be done here. It's not, we can't just end on the surfacey stuff. Like I can give you all the things and it still may not change. And again, this is not, you know, for every aspect of physical therapy, there are definitely some things that like are quicker, more acute. You can improve them very quickly with the right things. But as far as behavior and lifestyle in the population I was working with at the time, it became very frustrating that there were people who had a lot of potential to grow and become a better version of themselves and they weren't. And all in the same time, like I said, I was working as a physical therapist for years. And at the same time, like I was feeling like I was not living up to my potential. Like I had more to give. And I always felt that. And I felt like it wasn't what I was doing was not truly resonating with me because like I said, throughout my life, I was just doing the next logical step, you know, the next logical step. And it really came to a head where I was, you know, working all the time. Like I said, we're building the house. I had my child. It was during the pandemic. Like it was pure chaos. And I just sat on the floor and I'm like, I don't want to live like this anymore. I don't want to live like this. Like, I don't like how my life is. I'm not even mentally present for my child. I'm feeling the tension in my body. Like I can't relax. I can't sleep at night. Everything was just not feeling good. And it was that moment that I didn't know how I was going to get to a different place, but it was that moment that I made the decision that I was. And that's what I talk about. I had no idea how to get out of that. I felt like I was in a hole that I could not escape, but I made the decision that I don't want to live like this anymore. And so I took baby steps out of that. And like one step led to the next thing. And then that led to the next thing. So like I said, I didn't know the path back then, but I knew if I took one step, it would open up another door. And that's exactly what happened. And then if I walked through that door, another door would open. And that's what happened. And I started seeing more and more opportunities to get myself out of this very deep hole. And through my own journey of transforming my life, where I wasn't stuck in this pattern of just doing more and more and more and self-sacrificing and self-abandoning, that's really what I was doing for years, I started to really harness self-compassion and realize I was meant for more. And I started to feel joy again and actually be present in these moments and feel a sense of calm that I hadn't felt before. Like there was all these changes I was seeing throughout the process. And that just became a huge motivator to keep going. So that's how I ended up here because of my own transformation. And then now using that transformation to catapult other people in that direction where they don't have to spend 4 years to do the thing that I did. That I can take that, condense it for them and show them the exact steps that I've done to get to this point in my life. So yeah, I don't actually practice as a physical therapist currently. My business has transformed, but it's transformed in a way that I feel like I can help people for the helping the past version of myself. And that's really what I feel like is authentically aligned with who I am. And it took a long path of ups, downs, failures, you name it, to get here. But I feel like I'm in the right place and I'm helping the people I'm meant to help here.
You used a phrase just now or a term that I don't think I've ever heard. It makes sense to me when you said it, but self-abandonment. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you could expand on what you meant by that a little bit more and what exactly it means.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been that go-getter, high achiever, people pleaser. And in that process, I was always trying to make sure everything and everyone was okay before myself. So I would show up to work. I would be the yes man. Like, you need me to cover that? Yeah, I got you. Oh, you need me to drive there? Sure, I'll do it. Because I'm was always trying to strive for the next level in my career because that was how I'm wired. I want to achieve. I want to be successful. And on top of that, I was always, I was never a confrontational person. So I'd always want to make sure everyone was okay. Are you okay? You know, I would never want anyone to feel like they weren't heard. I was pouring myself into everybody else and making sure they're all okay. And I did this for years, not even realizing how much I was compromising myself in the process. And that's really where that self-abandonment comes from. And that while we're trying to take care of everyone and everything, we're forgetting about ourselves. And that's exactly what I did for years. I was allowing my health to decline because of stress. I was allowing my inner peace to be non-existent. I was not enjoying aspects of my life because I was making sure other people were okay. And unfortunately, this happens all too often when we're trying to do, quote, the right thing, but yet in the process of doing what, you know, society says is honorable and wonderful, and it is great to look out for other people, we can't abandon ourselves in the process. And that's really what I was doing. And I recognize that now.
It's always easier at least with hindsight. Everyone can see what they did wrong. Hindsight is 20/20, as they say. And you mentioned, you know, when you were at that point in your life, when you were at your lowest and it felt like the world was crumbling around you, you just kind of made a decision like, this isn't what I want. This isn't how I'm going to live. I don't know how I'm going to get out of this, but I trust that I will figure a way out. And a lot of that comes down to exactly that word, trust. So how do you start to build that trust within yourself? Like, to do that, you have to have some level of self-belief that, like, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. So where did that come from? Is that something that you've always had?
Yeah, it's looking back, I do think it was part of who I am as a person, but it's also something that I've worked very hard to cultivate in my life. And so at that moment, even though I was in a really, really low place, I could look back and be like, well, I set an intention, like I wanted to go get my degree in exercise science, I did it. I wanted to get a degree in kinesiology, I got my master's in kinesiology, I did it. I wanted the doctorate in physical therapy, I did it. So I looked back on things that I had accomplished, even though they weren't as meaningful at that time. It wasn't about what the outcome was, it was about who I was in the process. And so who I was in the process was that someone who didn't stop until they figured it out. I was someone who learned, someone who was open to learning. I was someone who was open to becoming a better version of myself. I was someone who was open to growth. And so I looked back on those things, not the outcomes of what I did, but more the process. And so I looked back on the stories of my life and realized, like, I've always been able to figure it out, even though I didn't know how to do it. I've always been someone who's focused on growth, even though I didn't know how to do it or what the path was. So I allowed those stories to be ones that fueled me in that process rather than hinder me. Like, I will tell you, back then I did look at, like, oh my God, I wasted all this time and I don't even want to do what I do. There was a lot of that thought process, a lot. And you know, a lot of regret for, like, I, you know, put myself in all this debt for this degree and I don't even like what I do right now. And, you know, there's so much of that thought process. But then I had to also kind of be like, I can wallow in this, but this is just keeping me in a very, very stuck place. And I did spend plenty of time. I don't want to say like, it was like, okay, all of a sudden I had this epiphany and life was great. It was not like that. But I was so sick of feeling like I was, feeling like I was stuck, feeling like I was trapped. I really felt trapped, that I was like just grabbing at whatever I could. And so those stories were one of those things that I grabbed at, like, how can I anchor this down? This become the root of the tree that I'm going to start to grow. And that's really what it was. But it's a battle. You know, I don't want to have anybody listen to this and think that it's easy. It wasn't easy, but you got to dig down deep in those moments where life is not how you want it and you're not feeling the way you want to, and realize that, like, you are more capable than you think you are in that moment, and start searching for those stories that tell you that you are. Start searching for those stories that, of all your success in your life, even if it's small, what's the smallest thing you've done that you put your mind to and it did work out for you? And those are the things you got to anchor onto in those really, really tough moments.
That's great advice. And I'm curious if in those moments, especially when first getting started, if you experienced any of what I heard from you first this term, but self-care guilt.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, yeah. And it's still something that I still struggle with. And I'm not to say that, like, oh yeah, everything is great. Like, I'm a mom of two boys and it still comes up where I will go do something for myself and be like, oh, I should really be with them right now. I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't take the time. So, but I'm aware of that. I'm very aware that that's a patterning it within me. But when I got started, 100%, I had so much self-care guilt. And really what was a catalyst for me to help remove myself from that was that I ended up hiring a business coach in 2021. And part of the program for the business coaching was a self-care aspect of it, where you commit to doing self-care. So it became something almost bigger than me, that this self-care is part of this program that I invested a lot of money into, you know? So I'm like, I need to do everything I can do in this program because I invested a lot. And so that really for me was a big eye opener, where like I put the money on and it forced me to realize that like I need to give myself to be the priority, give myself permission to be the priority rather. And that was a big catalyst in removing myself somewhat from that self-care guilt. But I would be lying if I said it was gone from that. I still experience that, but I'm aware of it. And I work through that every time it comes up if I do experience that guilt of taking care of myself.
You mentioned that it still comes up from time to time. You kind of can maybe talk your way out of it mentally. But how much self-care is necessary or reasonable? Like, where do you strike that balance between, you know, this is a necessary thing for me, I need to, you know, my life matters, I matter, versus like, I still have other priorities and everything can't be sunshine, rainbows, and smoothies?
Yeah. So I can kind of just want to start with like saying how I work through that guilt, because it's more than just changing, you know, like more than like a surfacey thing. It was one of those self-limiting beliefs that I realized. And for me, my old belief was that if I'm doing self-care, it's less time with my children. And so I'm not putting them first. My new belief and what I've cultivated and worked through is that when I'm taking care of myself, I'm a better mom for my children. When I'm taking care of myself, I'm showing them by example that they should be taking care of themselves. So when then they grow up, they don't have to deal with the things that I dealt with that self-abandonment. So by me taking care of myself, I'm actually being a better mom for them and I'm leading by example. So that has been a huge belief shift in me that has allowed me to prioritize the self-care. So it becomes a non-negotiable for me. So what I do, and it, you know, self-care, I want to just preface it, it can look a lot of different ways, you know? So it's not a day at the spa. Self-care is taking a moment for yourself, sitting in your emotions. It's journaling. It can be breath work. It can be a lot of different things. So for me, I anchor every day with bookending my day in the morning and bookending my day in the evening. So I have a morning routine that I do every single morning. I have 10 minutes at least for myself. And that's a minimum. You know, if there are days that it works out better, I can do more, but I am taking that 10 minutes in the morning. So right now, my one-year-old is getting up early. It's been a little challenging in the morning, but I still have that time in the morning. That still is a non-negotiable. In the evening, I still anchor it down with 10 to 15 minutes, and then I have little practices throughout the day. So if I'm feeling stressed, I have, you know, I do some breath work. I do some body shaking. So shaking, literally shaking the tension out, and there's a lot of benefit from that. Yeah, for your nervous system, it actually allows you to transition to that parasympathetic, like rest, digest. There's a lot of different things. I journal every night. I read self-development books or personal development books every night. The morning, I'm starting off with meditation. I also do a visualization later in the day. So it's not that I'm spending hours upon hours every day, because realistically, like, I have a lot to get done. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a mom. I have a lot on my plate. But it's these little habits that make all the difference. And that's what I found, that you don't have to overhaul your life to overhaul your life. You know, you just have to anchor yourself in these little things that teach your body and your system and your mind that you are showing up for yourself every single day. And it takes some of that stress off your system, where it's like, well, will you take care of me? Will you acknowledge me? It's like that kid that says, mom, 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 mom. And it's like, it will want that until you acknowledge it. So it's like, once you acknowledge that you're taking care of yourself, your system kind of lets off a little bit and allows you to start to open up to new possibilities. But it's those little things. So again, bookending your morning, night, and then having little things throughout the day.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that and kind of the mindset shift that you undertook, because that is it so much. You know, exactly as you said, I dealt with this a lot when I was a personal trainer. I would have moms and dads come into the gym and they'd be like, well, how can I take time to work out? My kids, I have to be spending time with them. How can I spend money on a trainer? Because there's still so much, but it's something I say on this show all the time is, you know, a rising tide raises all ships. And the version of you that your kids need is the best version of you. It's not a dull, muted, dead-eyed, overweight, knees hurting, back hurting, whatever it is version of you. It's the version of you that is the full of zest, full of life, full of energy. And that starts with, you know, the cliche, secure your mask. You can't pour from an empty cup, whatever, whichever one you like, use it, because they're all cliches that exist for a reason. And we all come to this conclusion eventually because we realize it's like, oh, I can't keep giving when I have nothing left to give. And, you know, again, having these small habits that you can lean on, especially when you're so busy, right? That's why I appreciate you sharing this as a, you know, a busy mom of two entrepreneur. It's like, you have all the excuses in the world to say that you can't. And that's why I think it's not only important to have these small, what I call foundational cornerstone habits, but I think that it's more important because of course you can, as you said, revamp your life by revamping everything. You know, you could tear everything down to the studs and rebuild everything from the bottom up. It's like, why would you want to do that if you can find some space just from a 5-minute morning routine, just from doing some squats while you put the baby down for a nap, just from reading 10 minutes a day or something like that. It's like, I always, when I work with people, when I coach people, it's like, of course I could give you this crazy routine that's going to get you results. My goal is to find the easiest, simplest routine that's going to get you results, because that's going to be the thing that you're going to stick to for the longest time. And that's how real lifelong change has happened, is created. It's through sustainable results over time. It's not through doing all of this change thrown at you at one shot. So I really appreciate you just sharing that and giving us like a real world look at, like, again, you're a mom, you're busy, you're an entrepreneur, you got a lot going on. So I really do appreciate that. And that's a great, you know, action step. But the last question that I ask all of my guests, if you had one last action step, and it can be something you talked about already, it could be something new to leave listeners with, that they could, as soon as they take their headphones out, as soon as this episode ends, start living a happier, healthier life, what would your action step be?
Yeah, I would say take a moment to just sit with yourself. And it may be hard. This was something that was really hard for me as like someone who their default was like negativity. Like if I took a moment of space, like I would just get into like a negative thinking loop. And I'm like, well, why do I want to spend quiet time myself? But it's in those moments that we learn the most about ourselves. So if you can be an observer in your own life in those quiet moments, so take a step back and without judgment, if something negative comes in your mind, you know, say, I wonder what that means, you know, or is that true? And that was a big thing for me. Is that true? Because for years, I thought every negative thought was true in my life. And now I realize that's not true. So if you can take those quiet moments, listen to your thoughts, question them, and then really start to learn from them and how you can move forward, that's huge. But again, don't believe every thought you have. And that was a real big thing for me. Don't believe every thought you have, because especially if you tend to get into a negative loop, which many of us do, unless we're intentional about it, you're going to think that there's something wrong with you, and there's not. It's just that this is how our brains are wired. And when you start questioning it, you start to release yourself for more.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, is that true is one of the most powerful sentences that you could ever learn. If you take nothing else from this episode, nothing else for the rest of your life, I mean, that one thing will change your life. If you, every negative thought, if you just add that sentence at the end of that, is that true? Do I know that to be true for a fact? Not feel like it's true. Factually, is that true? You'll see just about every negative emotion you'll ever feel will unravel with that simple bit of introspection. Simple does not mean easy, but it is the case. So I really appreciate you sharing that, Kelly. Last thing, if people want to get to know you, I have your podcast, your website, your social media all in the show notes. So anyone listening, go and click through Kelly's stuff. Go check out her Instagram, social media. But where's the best place if people want to talk to you, ask you a question? Where should they go?
Yeah, best place is my website. It's OptimalU, YOU, healthandwellness.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Kelly. I really enjoyed this conversation. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or got value from it, you can support the show by sharing it with a friend and giving them the gift of a happier, healthier life. You can also leave a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That helps boost the show on those platforms so more people can discover it and we can all grow together. I'll see you back here every Tuesday and Thursday morning. And until then, stay happy, stay healthy.